So first of all, kind of want to talk about, this is a two-part, and it is a series written by a lady. Lisa is her first name. I'm not even going to try to say her last name. A very godly Christian woman. And she has several books about grief, hurt, forgiveness, and, the really tough things we tend to encounter in life. And one of them really spoke to me, so much so that I have the Audible book, the hard copy book, 3.5 hour study video, and a 250-page study guide. So if that tells you. So to try to take the meat of some of this and, condense it into 2 25, 30-minute things is it was kind of tough, but I think with God's help, I did the best I could, and I really think this is something we can all apply in our lives, because unfortunately we live in a world and we are humans and we do encounter grief and all that it entails, and we need to understand what it means to also truly forgive. And I think, no, I know that until we understand what true forgiveness really is and how to get it, we're going to cause our own hindrances in our own lives, because that was not how we were created. It's just really hard to get from here to here through him, because like Perry said, our mind can be a really tricky place if we allow it. So part one of this is going to be about the deconstruction in life, what the world, what people around us, how they can destruct part of our lives. And then the second part of this is going to be the godly reconstruction if we allow him. So you go from complete miserable mess to a spiritual wonder walking hand in hand with God. I want you to keep Genesis 4:6 in mind. I'd sent out a devotional, I believe, last week about it. When Cain was within himself and he was so angry at his brother, and God said to him, "Cain, why are you so angry?" That was God saying, "Cain, talk to me about this. What is going on? What is causing this?" But did Cain do that? No. Cain handled the emotions on his own, and we know how that story ended out. He ended up killing his own brother because he decided to sit with his anger and with his emotions instead of going to God as God had requested him to do so. So this first part, I have titled it The Upheaval. What is one thing that almost every human on earth has in common? It is that they have endured grief. Grief is very profound. Let me explain a couple things about the profoundness of grief. There is a sound that is made that most humans can not only understand, but they can feel it without any words being spoken or any sort of explanation. And that is a mother's wail. It's proven time and time again that when a mother wails, any ear that wail touches, it is instantly recognized the depth of the sorrow. They feel the sorrow no matter their practice language. To the contrary, if you hear someone yelling in anger, most ears that overhear the angry yelling, it just raises questions, it raises eyebrows, it causes eyes to roll because people don't understand. But grief, they understand without an explanation. Heart loss. Let me be perfectly clear about this. Grief is not an emotion. Grief is heart loss and betrayal. Heart loss is when somebody, we'll say it this way, loses a child, a spouse, a partner, a sibling, not to negate the loss of a parent or a grandparent, but it is more easy to understand because that is the natural order than what you would compare to an unexpected loss. But it does not mean that that is easy. I'm not taking that away. But it isn't just about a loved one that is no longer physically with us here. It is seeing a loved one losing themselves to this world, to drugs, to prison, falling to the world, and falling away from God. Jesus experienced deep grief in the garden before his crucifixion and over Lazarus. So he truly understands the effects of grief. It is the shortest and one of the most profound verses in the Bible, Jesus. And that entails so much because it's like what Brother Bobby had taught on. That was Jesus stepping into the human emotion. So he felt exactly what Lazarus's family was feeling. What he went through in the garden was such a deep sorrow and grief that it caused physical pain to him. Grief changes you literally. It changes aspects of your DNA, epigenetic changes. It's DNA methylation. I know, I'm going nerdy. It's basically what it is it changes your genes without changing your DNA. So it serves like a switch that turns certain gene responses on and off in your body. It's like your immune system response, stress responses. It can cause insomnia, blood pressure, high blood pressure changes, and several other physical responses. It affects how your cells behave in their responses. You hear people say, don't hold on to that anger, or you have to stop stressing about that. You have to stop worrying about that. It's going to affect your health. It does. The good news is epigenetic changes do not have to be permanent. Why is this so important? Because these new genes that you have created or that grief has created in you can be passed down genetically. If we allow God, though, to work in us and cooperate with him at one of the toughest battles you will walk in this life that you will ever face, I promise you, you will come out more spiritual, peaceful, bolder, stronger, and his light will beam through you. I will say it again. This process is one of the toughest and hardest you will ever encounter. This is why so many of us do not fully deal with our emotions. We tend to bury some of our emotions or keep busy because we don't want to feel the hurt of them. The emotions and memories tied to those emotions are the emotions that we bury. And we bury them because they're just too traumatic. They're tied to traumatic events that we don't want to, we feel like anytime we try to address it, it just, all that boils back up and it becomes too much for us to want to deal with. And what this does is this causes, when you keep burying stuff, deep-seated triggers. Do you ever find yourself defining your life by the before and the after of a traumatic moment? Kind of like the life-changing upheaval, that one moment in time that changed how everything was to how everything is. The horrific season, the shocking day of discovery, the breath-stopping call about the accident, the divorce, the affair, the suicide, the wrongful death, the remarks of mockery that seem to be branded on your soul, the brutality unleashed by a loved one onto you, the false accusations, the email or text you were never supposed to see, the violation, the manipulation, the one marked moment in time that changed everything. Like our own personal BC AD, before Christ and Anno Domini. So that one line of BC and AD is the marked moment in time. So everything before Christ was born, this is the history. This is how the world was before Christ was born. Stop. Marked moment in time. Jesus was born. AD. We are still living in AD. We are in the year of the Lord. So that marked moment in time, there's so much that entails, right? Because before Christ had that line, that moment in time not have happened, think of how our lives would be today. We would not have a chance to walk in heaven with God. the feelings, and so in this, it kind of talks about your own personal BC AD, before the crisis, how everything was, that marked moment in time, and then after the devastation. It's how we tend to divide our lives when we've encountered a traumatic event. All the feelings that grief entails, all the emotions, the confusion and anger, and anger of these is usually the toughest one to deal with. Yes, those who have experienced heart loss feel anger. Tears eventually dry, but anger tends to take root, and it usually does. Anger in grief is not temporary, and it feels like there is no oxygen left for you to breathe. Feeling as feeble as the tiniest twig, yet stuck in that moment like a 100-year-old tree. And yet, the world and everything around you just keeps going while you watch from a cold, lonely window. Questioning others, questioning yourself. No one truly understands. No one truly gets me. I want to acknowledge that your pain is real, and so is mine. And I'm sorry if you have felt that you have not been acknowledged. But staying in that place of pushing and placing blame, dealing with the confusion, trying to figure it out on your own, with all the unanswered questions, digging to understand the why will only cause your pain to increase. The digging to understand the why in itself causes even more confusion, misunderstanding. That's when thoughts start creeping in, more thoughts than what you had before. Worse, all of this will come to a place that you will project that hurt onto others. And sadly, it projects onto those who least deserve to be hurt by our unresolved pain. And it's those who love you the most. This is a pivotal moment in time. This is another marked moment in time. It is deciding how and when to move forward with your life. Yet, this also causes confusion because we sense guilt for moving forward. It's a portion of survivor's guilt. That's what's hard about moving on. It is the letting go, as if you're leaving something you love or something so important behind. But what if it was possible to let go but carry the beautiful parts, the BC, with us during the AD? Life can be a graceful combination of beautiful and painful, but you don't have to put a definitive label on either. Grief is a soul-binding pain that is so intense you are not sure if you will ever feel any sort of normalcy again. It is so much to process, and you don't know what to do with all of it. And this is when the darkness will start to cloud your outlook on everything. Daily issues feel like worst case scenarios. Small aggravations feel like emotional chaos. Losses, big and small, feel like terminal direct assaults. The heaviness that you can't quite explain or pinpoint. But why? Why can't you pinpoint where that heaviness is coming from? The reason you can't is because it's starting to consume you. Different days and different times that heaviness will creep in. And this is how heaviness will mask itself. Cynicism, dressed like a security guard, making you believe if you hoped for less, it would protect you and prevent pain. But it is a thief in disguise to steal every bit of closeness you have with loved ones, and worse, your authentic intimacy between you and God. Bitterness masqueraded like a high court judge, making you believe that you must protect all evidence against all of those who have hurt you so that you can state and restate your airtight case and hear guilty proclaimed over them. In reality, it is a punishing sentence on you of isolation, and it will starve your soul of life-giving relationships. Resentment cloaked itself in a banner marked with the word vindication, making you believe that the only way to get free is to cause those involved in your hurt to hurt as badly as you do. It is a trap. It is a dagger with teeth that digs in deeper and deeper. And lastly, trust issues. Disguised as if they are a private investigator on stealth missions to catch everyone out to hurt you and prove no one is truly honest. It is a toxic gas that instead of keeping people away, it chokes the life out of everyone who tries to get close to you. These are known as the soldiers of unforgiveness, and they wage war against you. No one else except those who love you will experience all of this. What is the one thing we love to get but is the hardest thing to give? Forgiveness. I love the concept of forgiveness until I'm the hurt soul who doesn't. Even more tough is understanding and learning how to forgive yourself. Why is it so hard for us to forgive? Past triggers of the undealt emotions we never wanted to deal with. Past hurts. You may have toe dipped in them, but then all the ugly boils back up and it's too much and we tend to say, nope, put it back under the rug and keep going forward. This is self-regulation. It's emotional management, emotional suppression, which is bottling up your emotions and internalizing. And then when you start doing all of that, you're caught in a cycle. However, let's think of this. Let's think of forgiveness as a weapon. Our choices moving forward is the battlefield. Moving on is the journey. Being released from the heaviness is the reward. Regaining the possibility of trust and closeness is the sweet victory. And walking confidently with the Lord from hurt to healing is the true freedom that awaits you. Forgiveness is godly possible, but you're not going to always feel like it. Forgiveness often feels like one of the most maddening instructions from the Lord. It is a double-edged word, isn't it? It's hard to give, but amazing to give. Forgiveness isn't conditional depending upon circumstances. It isn't fighting through the irritation. It isn't an opportunity to choose to participate in or wrestling down indignation or the resistance of all your own justifications. That is you fighting on your phone, on your own to try to forgive. Your ability to forgive rises and falls on this, leaning into what Jesus has already done, which allows his grace to flow freely through you. That's Ephesians 4:7. Forgiveness is not an act of your own determination. True forgiveness is only made possible by your cooperation with God. So he made a way for us not to be dependent on our own strength. He gave us a forgiving way, a way to grab onto Jesus's outstretched arms, bloody from crucifixion and dripping with redemption. He covers and forgives what we only have been able to attempt to bury and hide from the world and from God. He forgives what we could never be good enough to make right. He made a way for us to simply cooperate with his work of forgiveness for us to receive and for us to be able to forgive. That is what we often misunderstand about forgiveness. We don't have to attempt to do it on our own because we will most likely fail. You might utter the word forgiveness, but it's not actually here. I believe with all my heart, forgiveness received and given is the very thing that splits this world open with the most stunning revelation of the reality of Jesus. But please never confuse redemption with reunion. Reunion or reconciliation requires two people who are both willing to do all the hard work to come back together. Redemption is just between you and God. God can redeem you from that inner turmoil, even if the human relationships do not come back together. It is so incredibly freeing to forgive and not wait on others who may or may not ever want to experience this journey and what true forgiveness is. But rather, about being obedient to what God has instructed us to do. Those who choose to want this true freedom and fully cooperate with God will dance the most freely in the beauty of redemption. Even though we know God created all, He knows all, He wove every fiber in us, we foolishly think we still hide things from Him. In that dark, secret place we created inside. As if we don't address our root issues, those things remain hidden from the world and from God. And in that place is where those soldiers of unforgiveness reside. Our root issues aren't caused by everyone else all the time. It is me. It is you. Because of our failure to understand true forgiveness. The triggers, your triggers, my triggers of all of our past hurts and emotions we tend not to deal with. So what does this cooperation with God look like? For me, it was this. It was the unzipping and ripping open your chest and letting God get into those darkest, deepest places, because every time I'd experienced grief before, I did it on my own. I was going to heal me. I was going to be okay. I was going to do it. And guess what? Every time something happened, it didn't work. So I knew this last time I had to have God everywhere in me. I couldn't keep that little graveyard and every little tombstone, the name and the date and the reason they were there. All those things. And that's exactly what I knew. I've seen it. That's exactly what it looked like. Anyone who had hurt me, any circumstance who had hurt me, I put him in that graveyard and locked it away. I didn't want to do, I had to deal with it once. Why would I want to keep dealing with it? But you have to. You have to. Allowing him into that hidden part you have created. The way I did it, it was always a band-aid fix. It was band-aids that I placed on wounds that were gaping. It was just temporary until the next incident occurred. So this last time, I did. I fully relinquished myself to God. I had to, because like I said, no other way I tried to do it on my own worked. It was all just temporary. Let me tell you, this process is not fun and it is not easy, but there was no other way for me this time. The scenery of our lives should not have a pit of pain in the center. Letting go of the clawing your way through a muddy pit, hoping there's some kind of reward buried there. We call it wallowing in with the hogs. It's nasty, it's messy, and it's stinky, and there is no reward there. Take God's hand. He will turn that pit of mud into fertile soil with potential and His unbreakable promises, and soon you will be dancing through all that has now blossomed and still in bloom around you. Tears will still come and go, as will the thoughts. And that's okay. But you take them captive. Freedom from forgiveness does not mean instant healing. And that's another thing we fail to understand. We think if we do it the one time that everything's going to be okay. We're humans and we live in the world. Right? So any chance there is for an indignation to come against us, it's going to. But this is how we fight. Emotions, when you do this, emotions will no longer become deep-rooted triggers. They will become and turn into compassion. And it takes time. Good thing our God is patient, forgiving, and has compassion on us. Exodus 34, 6 through 7. Yahweh, the mighty God, the gracious God, full of tender mercy. I am slow to anger and I overflow with unchanging love. You can trust me, for my faith, my faithful love will endure for thousands of generations. Psalms 103:13. The same way a loving father feels towards his children, that's but a sample of your tender feelings towards us, your beloved children who live in awe of you. Lamentations 3:22-23. Yahweh's tender mercies have no end, and the kindness of his endless love is never exhausted. New, fresh mercies greet me every sunrise. So wonderfully great is your faithfulness. Isaiah 54:10. Even if the mountains were to crumble and the hills disappear, my heart of steadfast, faithful love will never leave you, and my covenant of peace with you will never be shaken, says Yahweh, whose love and compassion will never give up on you. Micah 7:18. Who is a merciful God like you? Your grace wipes the slate clean of guilt and pardons the rebellion of the remnant of your people. You don't hold your anger against us forever, but you delight in showing faithful, tender love. Matthew 9:36. When he saw the vast crowds of people, Jesus' heart was deeply moved with compassion because they seemed weary and helpless, like wandering sheep without a shepherd. He is patient and he loves us. We are created in his image. So if he is able to do that, that means we are able to do that. We can only heal from what we are truly willing to acknowledge. Most are terrified of that stripped down, raw versions of themselves. After all, we've spent a lot of time creating our masks and building up the walls. However, when someone, by the power of the Spirit of God, overrides the resistance of flesh and the pull of unforgiveness, it is shocking. It is one of the rarest moments witnessed in the lives of everyone looking on. It is when you get to see with your physical eyes evidence of the Spirit of God as real as if you can touch it. It is a moment that no one forgets. When this world that is so saturated with flesh resenting flesh, hearts hating hearts, fist slamming fist, pride rising against pride, suddenly sees someone dropping their sword and daring to say, I forgive, it stops all. In the split second of that utterance, evil is arrested, heaven touches earth, and the richest evidence of truth, of the truth of the gospel reverberates not just in that moment, but in generations to come. While salvation brings flesh into alignment with the Spirit of God, forgiveness is the greatest evidence that the truth of God lives in us. And no one who sees this can walk away unaffected. So just think about that. No one who witnesses a moment like this can walk away unaffected. Meaning, God has also planted a deep-rooted seed in them because of our willingness to cooperate with him. It's kind of like the old saying, two birds, one stone. I mean, you have to understand, God designed all of this, all of it to be this way. So I'm going to close with this. Remember what Terry was speaking on. Remember what our minds are focused on. It is what your mouths will speak. And that is when you put it into spiritual action. And that moment, it will reveal who you are mastered by. I have witnessed those who have endured deep grief with God and those who have endured grief without God. And they fell back to the world. And sadly, they now ooze and seethe pure, ugly bitterness. They literally have a dark aura that you spiritually can see. As a quick example of a person who fell back to the world instead of coming to God. A person whose spiritual leader went to heaven. This person finally stopped going to church using their reasoning, which I call an excuse, and I quote, "It spiritually broke me." I had to stop for a moment and ask, are you talking about spirit with a capital S? Or God, you know, is it God's spirit, the Holy Spirit? Or are you talking spirit with a lowercase s, your spirit? And I did not care for the answer. God's spirit. That is a lie. God's spirit does not break from you. You are weak in the flesh, and you ultimately are placing blame on God. As if things didn't work out the way you wanted, you're saying that God detached from you? Where is that in His Word? It doesn't even make sense. That is a blatant lie from the devil you have chosen to believe. And instead of gaining understanding on that from godly counsel, you are walking and talking a terrible lie about my God. You do not want to influence others into that thinking because you will answer for it. Let me be perfectly clear. That's where I draw a line with a person. You do not lie about my God like that. And I believe it would be very shameful if I did not stand on that truth, if I did not draw the line, because then I'm just as guilty of it for allowing it. The ties of friendship broke over time. The bitterness and resentment took over as that person allowed. There was a time I tried to reach out with an olive branch of compassion, not of understanding. I didn't need to understand their why. I knew where it stemmed from, and it was the devil, and no excuse or earthly reasoning would change my mind or my heart on that. But compassion, because they needed to understand God's true love. However, that olive branch was not received, but it was taken from me and beat the tar out of me with it. Not only beat me, beat my loved ones, beat my pastor, my church, my brothers and sisters in Christ. And it was bad. And that person continues on that path still to this day. After that long conversation, my heart was broke. Not broke because of the friendship that was lost. Broke because I seen a sister in Christ go so far from God that she had no intention of coming back. I didn't know what to do with all of that. Was this another gravestone getting ready to be marked in my heart? No. I knew I needed godly counsel. I needed a mature spiritual leader. And lo and behold, within minutes, my phone rang with a call to action. Mom has a flat tire just outside of Maryville. Can you and Trav go and help? Yep, we'll be right there. Within minutes, we arrived to that car with the flat tire on the side of Highway 60. And soon Terry was climbing into our car while Trav was changing her tire, and at lightning speed, may I add. And in those couple of minutes while Trav changed her tire, I received exactly what I'd asked God for, mature spiritual wisdom to help me, to make me stay wise, to make me stay close to God and not let the devil lie to me and fall away from God. God is so cool like that. His timing. He knows, even in those little moments, He knows exactly what He needs. I mean, when you think about it, what I asked for, what He knew I needed, what my heart needed, and in minutes, I was getting it. But I had to cooperate with God on that. I could have easily sat there, cracked open a beer, and stewed on my feelings and got mad and just created another gravestone. That's just one example of letting God in during your deep, painful moments versus attempting to control it all on your own. Thank you, God, that you have given us answers, help, wisdom, and the forgiveness to encounter every part of life we meet. Next Sunday, I'll be teaching on the godly rebuild after you have endured what we feel as a deconstruction of ourselves. So we're going to go from deconstruction to the reconstruction, or as I like to refer to it as kintsukuroi. It's where if a vase is broken or shattered, they take that vase and weld it back together with pure gold, making it perfect, even more beautiful, and a one of a kind piece of art. And that's what God will do in our lives. But you got to do some of the hard work on your own. And that's to let him all the way in and clean out those dark parts and start moving forward. You got to take those thoughts captive. Okay. That's all I have.